listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy and Spring Branch.
Astros opening day, college hoops, $100 ounce Shinerbach Towers for $10. That's amazing. $3 Makers, $2 Mexican Candies. You can get $6 Casamigos with their March Madness, $6 Casamigos. And then tomorrow it's your Houston Cougar Watch Party. Full audio during the game, DJ during commercials. Someone texted us in, 713-780-3776. Are you guys working on Good Friday? Yeah, we are all working. The boys will be at Rose Hill Beer Garden in Cypress. Have some cold beer while you're there. Heads up for tomorrow. Come out to the Decoy now, and then tomorrow to hang out with us. Make sure you're at the Rose Hill Beer Garden in Cypress. All right, second base, Jose Altuve. Best case, worst case scenario, Blinkers?
I mean, best case for me is that he stays healthy for the entire season, because if he does, I fully believe that he's going to, you know, have obviously the kind of numbers he had last year, but for more games with better results. I think he returns to form for a guy that can give you 30 bombs, that can hit around 300, that can be the guy that we've got used to seeing. I don't think he's close to falling off yet. And the fact that he was able to put up the numbers he was with it being as hurt as he was last year, I just need him to stay healthy, because I believe if he does that, that we'll see those numbers be where we want them to be.
Yeah. Offensively, I think he's capable of just being as good as he was. His injuries last year were kind of fluky, so I'm not really concerned about his injury proneness. Like, I'm more concerned about a Yordan Alvarez. But we have seen more dings with Jose Altuve over the last couple of years. For me, it's more about him defensively. I think that's the only place we've seen him age. We've seen him age defensively, where he doesn't have the range that he once did back in his earlier days, back in the prime of his career. Now that he's past the prime of his career, he's still hitting at the same level. He's just not who he was defensively. I still want him to be capable. So that best case for me, he's still capable defensively at second base. He gives you what he did offensively last year. Worst case, you see more and more regression defensively, to where he's to the point where it's like, not that you're benching him or anything, not that you're trying to DH him or anything, but to the point where it's like, man, don't hit the ball to second base. Or you're giving up more hits because you don't have the range at second base that the average Major League Baseball team does. So for me, it's more about the defense with Jose Altuve than the offense.
That's fair, because we, you know, as much as we've said that we haven't seen his offensive numbers start to diminish, we've seen his decline at second base. And it happened quickly, and I don't think it's going to get any better.
Yeah. What about shortstop with Jeremy Peña?
Look, I mean, I hope Jeremy Peña, you know, continues to do what a lot of people don't like, which is do exactly what he's been doing. I hope he, you know, best case scenario is he's figured out a way to kind of lay off some of the breaking pitches that have been problematic. But then from that standpoint, maybe a little bit more pop, but just keep doing what he's doing both offensively and defensively. And as we've talked about, that makes him an above-average shortstop in American League and in baseball. And you can take that in the middle of this line, I mean, with the rest of this lineup.
Peña, to me, at shortstop is the opposite of what I just said about Altuve at second. I trust his defense. His defense is going to be good to great. No worries at all about his defense. It's about offense. Best case offensively for Jeremy Peña is he puts the good of his rookie year and the good of his second year and combines forces and gets the best of it all. His rookie year, he showed good pop. He showed that he could hit the ball hard and out of the ballpark and hit the ball into the air. He was still striking out too much, and he wasn't walking enough. Last year was the opposite. Last year, he improved his strikeout rate. He improved his walk rate. He improved his batting average. He got better across the board offensively, with the exception of power. The power flat out disappeared. So best case, he combines that with his defense and turns into a top 10 shortstop in baseball. The worst case is that he just continues to disappoint offensively. He doesn't put it all together, and he's Adam Everett. And that would be the worst case for Jeremy.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I don't think there's any reason to believe he's going to be Adam Everett. But it is fair to just, you know, be a little concerned about him offensively. I feel like, you know, he's tweaked his approach a little bit in his stance. I hope it works out for the best of him, because you're right. I mean, look, even if the offensive numbers aren't great, he is one of the better defensive shortstops in baseball.
Yeah, I agree with that. Final offensive one, third base with Alex Bregman in his walk year.
Well, it's going to be interesting. Best case scenario is he's in the top five to six for MVP voting, you know, the extra weight means extra home runs, and he gets more pop. He still has that eye at the plate. He still, you know, hits between 280 and 300, and he earns every dollar that he thinks he's worth in the open market.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm not going to go up to top five. I don't think that he has that in him anymore, but I'll say top 10. So we're right there. Very similar conversation. The defense doesn't go away. Very good defender. Conversation for Gold Glove if it weren't for Matt Chapman, and he has a big year in his walk year. That's best case. Worst case, you know, last time he put on weight, had some injuries, but maybe he goes the opposite way of that contract year where a lot of players, most of the time, a majority of the time, players will have a big walk year, but sometimes you see poor years in walk years because that pressure is too much because they want to get paid. That would be worst case, but I would bet more on the best case than the worst case. Starting pitching as a group.
Yeah, look, as a group, I think that obviously the best case scenario is they're able to kind of keep the ship afloat while Verlander gets back and it's just a couple of weeks and he's back. And then shortly after that, everybody falls into place and you get McCullers, whether it's at the All-Star break or after, you get Garcia right around the same time. But the fact that you get another year like you got out of last year from JP France, that you get guys that are capable of competing and keeping their ERAs, you know, lower. This staff has too much talent for them not to be one of the top, I'd say, just to go lightly, but I think best case scenario is one of the top five staffs in baseball.
I think that's best case scenario too, but I also think it's a volatile group because you have a lot of guys that could go the other way. If Verlander can sustain who he was last year, cool. Like that's a 2-3 starter in any starting rotation. But he's into his 40s now, and he's had an injury for the second time in as many years. What does Father Time look like for Verlander? Does it push him closer to the back of the rotation than the top of the rotation? Fromber, when he's going well, he's as good as anybody. First half, Fromber, as good as anybody. Betting favorite to win the Cy Young at the midway point last year. Should have been the AL starter. Second half, he was not that guy. So he's volatile. Same thing with Christian Javier. We've seen that. Didn't look like himself last year at all. So do we get good Javier, bad Javier? Hunter Brown has the makings of being a top-of-the-rotation starter, but he didn't show that last year. Does he get closer? Does he get there this year? Don't know. So, like, there's a lot of dominoes to this one. The health, you know. What does the health of Luis Garcia look like and Lance McCullers look like? And if they do come back healthy, how good are they? How much do they add to this pitching rotation? So this could go either way. Like, this one's extremely volatile for me. I think they could have a top three. I've said they could have a top one pitching staff in all of baseball. Some of that would be because of the bullpen. But I also think they could fade into the middle of the pack if a lot of these ifs go the wrong way. So this one to me is all over the place.
I just think that the biggest thing that is the most volatile of all of that is that the injuries. I mean, you've got – it's not just one or two guys. You're obviously dealing with four guys right now when you're wondering when they're going to come back, what they're going to look like when they come back. To your point, it's one thing to say, hey, they're back. But they have to be effective. They have to be what they used to be, at least in a majority of the circumstances with those guys. And so, yeah, that injuries thing makes everything so volatile.
All right, last one. The bullpen where they've added Hader, but they lost Neris, Stanek, Maton. It's a little bit soft in the middle now. Best worst case for the bullpen.
Best case scenario is you get you return to being one of the 3 to 5 best bullpens in baseball. That back end 7, 8, 9 makes you not have to worry as much about the middle. The starters go deep or deep enough where you're consistently giving you six. To where you're getting to a point. And it doesn't matter who's getting all the saves because you have, like, in the case of a Presley, where sometimes, you know, two in a row, 3 and 4 days, not his forte, you can kind of shuffle the guys around enough to where everybody is capable of closing games, getting outs, and they, you know, that bullpen ends up being where we were used to seeing it in the top three.
Yeah, top three guys, just who they are. I think that they can be from a best-case point of view. Montero's who he was in the second half last year. Not even 2 years ago, Montero. Just second half of last season, Montero would be fine enough for me. And then a couple of those guys that we, you know, haven't seen a ton. Seth Martinez, Mashinsky, you know, the rest of the pieces. One or two of those guys can step up to be like a Phil Maton level guy. They don't need to be Brian Abreu. They don't need to be Josh Hader. They just have to solidify the middle of the bullpen. You don't need the middle of the bullpen to be a great team. You don't need the middle of the bullpen to win a lot of games. You need the middle of the bullpen to, like, keep you alive, to, like, survive a tight game in the middle. If a starting pitcher leaves early, you put up one or two runs, to where you can get into the back end, let your offense go to work. So you don't need a great middle of the rotation, but you do need big league arms in the middle of the rotation. I think they can get there. So that's best case scenario. Worst case scenario is one of the big three. They go backwards. Ryan Pressly doesn't handle the non-closer role all that well. And then all of these other pieces that are filling the middle of the rotation are just minor league guys and not very good. And that bullpen's just not very good in general because of that.
Yeah, my big fear is that they might have to go out and find themselves at least one more veteran reliever, you know, at some point during the first half.
Yeah, and the good news with that, like if that's the worst thing that happens, that's much easier than being able to find like a cleanup hitter.
Sure.
That's much easier than being able to find like a top three starter. Like you can solidify your bullpen pretty well at the deadline. We saw that with James Click a couple of years ago. We're like, they were awful in relief, and then all of a sudden the deadline, he trades for like three solid arms, and all of a sudden the bullpen's pretty solid. So
yeah was that, you can, that was Graveman.
Graveman,
Maton, and
Yimi Garcia, I think.
Yimi Garcia, there you go. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep,
like you added three guys, and like none of them were huge names, but those three guys were solid. And all of a sudden, like a mediocre to bad bullpen turned into a pretty good bullpen. And that was at one deadline with three different guys. And actually, you also got Yiner Diaz in that for Miles Straw, who got DFA'd the other day. So, like, it's not that difficult to spot. Like the two biggest weaknesses on this team, in my mind, are the middle relievers, the bench. But if there's two areas you can solidify the easiest, those are the two. So you can kind of afford to wait and see a little bit.
Absolutely. Look, I think that, you know, you look at center field, and if Jake is just capable of doing what we said, that's a huge sigh of relief, because now you can just truly focus on what you need to improve on, if, in fact, you have to improve anywhere.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Get out and watch the Astros and some March Madness tonight at the Decoy with the boys until 6. Decoy will be open late for your viewing pleasure. All right, time for the Fight Club bracket. Who won our matchups yesterday? What are the matchups today? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
32 men enter, but only one can be named champion. These men have faces for radio, but do they have the chin to take a punch?
You want me to hit you?
That's right.
What, like in the face?
Surprise me.
This is so stupid.
Anyone can give a hot take. Everyone has an opinion, but can they fight?
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
It's time for the Killer Bees Fight Club. Let's get ready to...
Okay, that's Michael Buffer's lawyers. I'm not going to say the line, Michael Buffer lawyers. I'm not going to say the line. You're so strong.
Michael Carroll's humors me. Fromber's gotten two inning-ending double plays with the bases loaded, one out. So it's like the good and the bad of Fromber. The good Fromber getting out of these jams. The bad Fromber getting into these jams. Are we going to do the theme songs for these pitchers this year?
I think we need to.
Yeah, I think
we had pretty
good
success.
Good call. Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Yeah, should and then we have to add for where we need.
Do we keep the ones we've had? Or
Fromber was pretty sketchy in the second half. Maybe we should revisit Fromber.
Yeah, but the whole thing was.
I think it's symbolism, yeah.
Yeah, it was love roller coaster. Because
okay, actually, you know what? You're right. That is still fitting.
His story, you know. All right, yesterday in the Killer Bee Fight Club bracket, we got close to the end of the first round. We'll get to the end of the first round today. We had three squash matches, quite frankly. Landry Locker beat up on Stan Norfleet, which I don't know about this. Bad voting, I think. 64% to 36%. I think Stan Norfleet's winning that fight. I think the voters got that one wrong, but we honor the vote of the voters. The other two matchups, John Granato buried Ben Gary, 88% to 12%. Poor guy. It was good knowing you, Ben. And then in the final matchup, Seth Payne beat Adam Wexler 85% to 15%.
Pretty much how we had laid out the last two. The first one was surprising to me as well.
I was surprised Wexler even got 15%, to be honest.
I mean, some people.
Like, did the people who voted for Adam Wexler, did they not see Seth Payne play?
Brian,
did they not know who he is?
Have you ever heard the term sympathy vote?
Seth Payne would maul him like a bear.
We got three matchups today. The first matchup is the final first round matchup. It comes from the Kenny Hand region, and it features the show co-host on the Clint Sterner Show and Brad Gilmore, who is a co-host on the Hall of Fame. Who's arguing for you here, Brian?
Do either of you know the show very well?
I do not.
I've never met him. We've had a couple of interactions on.
All right, Twitter. Well, that, I guess that'll be enough. So you, I'll let you go ahead and argue for the show, and okay. Joel will argue for Brad Gilmore.
Well, you've got Brad Gilmore, the sharp dressed man.
He is very sharp dressed.
Yes, he's going to come prepared. He's going to bring the drip. He's going to be, you know, to the nines, top to bottom. And then because of the fact that he's worked with the five-time champion, and he is a very detailed-oriented person that's going to get down to the brass tacks of the technique and the skill set to be a wrestler and to be a fighter. And I think he's going to come out swinging. I think he's going to understand how to pace himself. I think he's going to make sure that nothing gets wrinkled, nothing gets out of place, and he still takes care of business.
Did you say that Brad's going to get better because of osmosis through Booker T?
I didn't really say osmosis, but I think that you can't help but learn about the science of wrestling.
He's saying he's a student of the game.
Yes, working with a guy like Booker T.
I think it's kind of osmosis-y. But if you're going to use that argument, I can use that argument too for the show. He's going to, through osmosis, learn how to fight from the Baytown baddie. Being a friend of the Baytown baddie means you're a baddie in yourself. Plus, the show's been training for this. He's been losing lots of weight with soda water. So because he's been losing lots of weight, he's gotten better with the osmosis thing with Baytown baddie. He's going to be able to win this fight against Brad Gilmore, but it's going to have to be early. He's going to knock him out early. I don't think that he's got the endurance here.
Yeah, I was going to say, if Brad Gilmore just sticks and moves, he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I think Brad Gilmore takes this one 10-9. I value the osmosis coming from the five-time champion a little bit more. Brad Gilmore, also a student of the boxing game. So I believe in his ability to fight, and if he's learning anything, if the show is learning anything through osmosis, through the Baytown baddie, that might get fumbled away. So 10-9 for Brad Gilmore.
That means the show thinks with an 0-3 count, you still got a chance.
That station does not know baseball. They flipped out today because Lance McCullers got placed on the 60-day IL. They flipped out. And then they acted like
I saw that on the rundown. Yeah. I didn't know whose reaction it was. Okay, you'll have to tell me more later.
And then they acted like Lance McCullers isn't allowed to throw a baseball while he's on the 60-day IL. They acted like he can't rehab while he's on this. It's bad. Bad.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knew he was not going to come back until July. What'd you expect?
Not everyone.
Well, okay. Anyone with half a brain knew.
Oh, I like
if you're
that.
Coming
if
back
you know
in
ball.
July, you're going to go on the 60-day DL.
It's a good litmus test if you know ball or not.
If you saw that news
and you just let it like roll off your back because you knew it was coming and you know it's just basically a technicality, then you know ball. If you don't know that, then you don't know ball.
Well, Jeremy, you and I both worked on the show, and I think we have an answer for that.
Well, I was talking about the other one, but whatever. Two more matchups in the Killer Bee Fight Club's bracket. We're starting the Sweet 16, so now you know it really means something. It's coming down to the final. Well, it's not coming down to the finals here. We still got Sweet 16.
We have actually a combatant for the Sweet 16 here. Should I call him over to argue for himself?
Yeah,
hey, Joe.
Over.
Oh, yeah.
Joe, come over here.
Come here, Joe. You've never seen a microphone you didn't like. Get in here. Stick up for yourself.
You're up in the brackets. You versus Clanton. You're going to have to argue for yourself.
No math.
All right, I'm going to hand it over to him.
No math.
Hey, Joe. Has he had any shiners yet?
He's got one right now.
Oh, that's
this
that's
thing
good.
On.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. So okay, who's arguing, Joe? You're fighting Clanton, the Sweet 16 matchup in the Palillo region. Do you want me to argue for Clanton first, or do you want to argue for yourself first?
You can argue for Clanton first.
All right. Well, Clanton's going to beat you because he wears Affliction T-shirts. He's taller than you. He's got the reach. He's a better athlete than you. He's going to run circles around you, and he was talent whenever you weren't.
You're right. He was talent when I wasn't, but here's the thing. He might be taller than me, but he's not faster than me. I've seen that guy move up and down the hallway trying to get a cup of coffee and get back from bathroom breaks on time. He can't beat me. He's too slow. I might be fatter than him, but I'll be okay.
Ground game.
I can take him down. There's no rules in this league, right?
Right.
Yeah, I can take Clanton down to the ground and make him tap.
There's no math test. You got this.
I love you, AC, but Josh Innes almost made you quit, so I'll be fine.
What maneuver are you using to tap him out?
From way downtown, bang!
He's had a couple of those towers, I can tell.
Just going to say, get him more beer, pronto.
Which, you're tapping him out with a guillotine?
Yeah, that's all I know how to do.
Do you know how to
guillotine? I sound winded right now. Now you got me worried you're winded just getting that out.
No, I can do a guillotine. It's pretty simple. Okay. You just wrap your arms around his head. legs around his waist, squeeze tight, he'll be okay.
What's easier, a guillotine or mathematics?
Guillotine, definitely, for sure. It's not even close.
Right. We'll see how the results turn out today.
Oh, I'm going to
lose. Fighting for a spot to the Elite Eight.
Why don't you hear how BMAC has the card?
I'll just send it to Josh Anderson and have him tweet it out.
Okay, you can't use that joke twice.
Sorry.
Can't go there twice. It was good the first time. Can't
Did
go
you mention the
twice,
Iverson
though.
Tattoo?
He has an Iverson tattoo? Okay. I didn't know that.
All right, Brian, how do we see this going? Adam Clanton, Joe George, you heard the arguments. How do you have this one going? Hand it to the judges.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to disagree with Joe on this one. I think I'm going to take Adam Clanton in this fight. But I do appreciate the effort there, though, with the blast that he put on Adam Clanton and the case for his side. But I'll go with the bigger man in this, and I'll go with quite an honorary fella, and I will go with Adam Clanton to win 10-9 over our own Joe George.
All right, final matchup that we'll be voting on today. Another Sweet 16 matchup in the Palillo region. Winner of this one gets the winner of Adam Clanton and Joe George in the Palillo region final. You have Clint Sterner, the Baytown Batty, going up against Sports MT Matt Thomas.
Oh, man. I know what I want to do here. I know what I want to do here, and I'm going to do it. Joel will be arguing for Matt Thomas. And Jeremy will be arguing for the Baytown Batty.
What should I do? Well, I have a sensitivity level that means that I cannot be beat, which means it's not just me, it's my Thomas Army as well. And I am going to come out swinging from the very get-go because of the fact that I am a major market radio host that is only the fourth voice in Houston Rockets history. I bring clout. I bring power. I bring backing. It's like Granato with his Italian army. The MT Army is just it's loaded, and they're coming out of the woodwork to take down the Baytown Batty.
Well, you don't get tag team partners. It's just one on one.
What are they
going to
do?
Granato did it. Granato doesn't matter.
Ring?
It doesn't matter where it comes from.
Yeah, Granato's the exception to almost everything, though.
10,000 people behind him.
All right, what do you got, Jeremy?
Sterner is going to stomp a mud hole into Matt Thomas, and then if frogs get wings, they'll fly, and that's as good a chance as Matt Thomas has to beat Sterner, and, you know, a lot of other references. Sterner drinks his milk. I mean, I don't even really have to do much of an argument here. The Baytown Batty wins this fight. Love him, too, but he's not winning a fight against the Baytown Batty. Now, Matt, if he's going to beat him, it's going to have to be with wit.
Well, if this was an academic decathlon, this would be an entirely different conversation. But in a fight club scenario, bare knuckles, I will go Baytown Batty by stoppage over Matt Thomas. This is a no contest here.
All right. You can get to voting on these at Jeremy Branham. Who do you have advancing? Our three matchups today, the show, Brad Gilmore, and the final first-round matchup in the Kittyhan region. And then two Sweet 16 matchups in the Charlie Palillo region. Adam Clanton, Joe George, Joe with some shots after a couple of Scheinerbach Towers, and then Sterner, Matt Thomas. Speaking of those Scheinerbach Towers, 100 ounces for just $10 throughout the day, throughout the weekend. Astros opening day going on now. College hoops at 6 o'clock at the Decoin Spring Branch. $3 Makers, $2 Mexican Candy, March Madness, $6 Casamigos, and it's your West Houston watch party for the Cougars tomorrow. Full audio during the broadcast, and then a DJ playing through the commercials. It's going to be a party there tomorrow night at the Decoy. We'll step aside for a moment when we come back. Bad Take Boulevard. What are the worst takes of the week that you've heard? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. You're in a predicament, aren't you? You want to watch some basketball. You have the holiday tomorrow. You have a holiday this weekend. You're probably looking to hang out, maybe go to the golf course, maybe have a drink. But that grass is too high and it needs to be mowed. Oh, no, not what you want to be doing this weekend. You wouldn't have to if you had Sin Lawn. You don't have to waste your valuable time dealing with your yard because Sin Lawn eliminates all of that. It eliminates the chores and the stress of having to mow your grass, pulling the weeds, the dead spots, all of that stuff that you don't want to do will stop and stop with Sin Lawn. Sin Lawn's here to get your weekends back, get your fun back. Sin Lawn's the evolution story. Story of the AstroTurf that was made popular by the Astrodome, and now Sin Lawn, that's S-Y-N Lawn, Well, they want to improve your lifestyle. Stop doing the things you don't want to do. The mowing, the pulling the weeds. Stop throwing money into an ugly yard that you're embarrassed of people seeing. You could have probably hosted Easter this year, but you can't because you're embarrassed of people seeing your yard. Synlawn Artificial Grass is the best on the market. They offer a lifetime warranty with products that are made here in the USA. The quality is all top shelf, and the people are fantastic. They got your back. It's fully insured, fully bonded. They have their own in-house crews. They don't contract anything out. And Synlawn's number one priority is making you happy. Synlawn is perfect for your yard, whether it's for your patio, whether it's for the kids' playground, your pets. Don't let mud come inside anymore. That putting green that you've always wanted, you can do that now with Synlawn. Head to 975synlawn.com to learn more. That's 975synlawn.com, 975synlawn.com. Synlawn, control the process from yarn to yard.
Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
All right, it's that time for the worst takes of the week. What belongs on Bad Take Boulevard, 713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Popular guy is going to be Jay Williams. In fact, the first two are from Jay Williams. First one's not really his take. He just kind of relays the message. But here was Jay Williams earlier this morning talking about that Draymond Green ejection yesterday and how it affects Steph Curry.
I'm getting texts from people that I really value their decision, right? High-level people. And what these texts are reading is, well, how about the leadership of Stephen Curry?
I don't know who's sending Jay Williams these texts, but these guys belong on Bad Take Boulevard. How in the world is Draymond Green acting like a petulant child have anything to do with Steph Curry's leadership?
It really shouldn't. And the fact of the matter is, if you watched anything with that game, Steph was outraged and really ticked off that Draymond got ejected. And so was the coaching staff and everybody. I don't know how in the world you try and put that on Steph Curry when Steph's the one guy that's able to tell him, too, that, you know what, that was completely out of line. And if you watched the video last night, he was ticked off.
Yeah, I mean, this is Draymond Green. This is not a rookie coming in where Steph Curry's got to take him under his wing and, like, be the mentor, be the leader to him. This is a grown-ass man in his mid-30s at this point. Draymond's been in the league for how long? 10-plus years at this point? No, there's no way you can put the behavior of a 10-plus-year veteran like Draymond Green, who's been in the league that long, and put that behavior on someone else. He's a grown adult. He's responsible for his own behavior.
Such a bad take. Steph, how do you – blasting Curry's leadership over a grown man who's been there forever, who then gets on his podcast afterwards to, like, 3 minutes into the game, he's talking about it on his podcast afterwards. Yeah. I don't like anything about
that. And on top of it, he saved his bacon. He would have caught so much more hell if they lose that game. Curry's the reason why they won that game and came in and once again saved the day for Draymond, looking like a complete you-know-what.
Not a fan. All right, the next one is Jay Williams' take. Here was Jay Williams' idea on what he wants to do with the NCAA tournament.
We got into this before. Let's just expand the tournament. Let's just expand it. So let's just do 112 teams. The top 16 teams get a bye in the first round. Listen to me, Unc. The top 16 teams get a bye in the first round. The first round, you have 96 teams. 24 games played on Tuesday. 24 games played on Wednesday. Then you have the round of 64. Thursday, 16 games. Friday, 16 games. Then you get to the round of 32. 8 games on Saturday. 8 games on Sunday. There you go. 96 games in 6 days. This way, let everybody get in. Unc, you're not paying attention to the first 5-30 games of the thing anyway.
There's Jay Williams' idea. I like the thought he put into it, but I don't like it.
At least put effort into the take, but I love that he finishes his strong take to add more games to the schedule by you're not watching them anyway. Well, if we're not watching them, then why are we adding them?
And basically, aren't you really cursing the chance for Cinderella's? Because you're going to do the NC State thing where they're going to be playing games almost every day, and they're going to be worn
good
out.
Point.
And
they're going to have to play another game in a short amount of time.
You think that would eliminate those teams from having a chance of winning on a Thursday or Friday?
I mean, depending on what they did coming into the tournament. I mean, if they're a team like NC State where they're playing five games in 5 days, they get, you know, 3 days off, and now, or actually it'd be less than 3 days because they're coming in on a Tuesday. I mean,
NC State's still alive, though. So, like, NC State's
I don't think it impacts the
seeds beating the other seeds that much.
But all the top 16 get a bye, so you're not going to see, like, the upsets that you normally would in terms of like twos and threes.
Well, you still have the 116 because he still plays it down to 64. So you would still have these teams. I think you might actually see more of these upsets because like these teams that had strong regular seasons that maybe didn't finish strong, you're going to kind of eliminate the teams that aren't necessarily playing well. And then the teams that are playing well, now you're going to get more of them. In fact, I think you might see more upsets because you're kind of getting rid of the weak before they even get into the round of 64.
Well, I definitely have no use for 24 games on Tuesday and 24 games on Wednesday before we get to the bracket that we're used to now. I mean, right now on these opening Thursday and Friday that we love, they're playing 16 games. To me, it's spread out pretty well, spread out almost perfectly. And you're going to add 8 more games on the schedule for even worse teams.
Too many. I don't mind 72 or 76. I don't mind expanding by 4 or by 8. More play-in games, but 112 is way too many. I don't want to hand out participation trophies. The regular season should still have a good amount of importance.
The big thing to me is like what they say this year was the highest amount of, what the committee said, the highest amount of teams that were bumped out that were close to the bubble, around the bubble, because of the 5 unpredicted conference champions.
But that's 5.
So
not,
that's what I'm saying.
Not like
Jeremy's
40
point.
Plus.
Yeah, I'll go as high as like 70, 72. I'm not going over 100.
Yeah, it's insane.
I also wouldn't mind just leaving it the way it is. I'm fine with that, but if you're going to expand just 72, just 76, not more than that. Mike Greenberg, you know, of course, made famous for Mike and Mike. He has a suggestion in which he thinks that UConn can make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference.
If they were in the NBA's Eastern Conference, would they make the playoffs? I think I'm looking at teams that are 8 games under 500 in the play-in right now. They're better than
I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that, Greeny.
And Orlovsky.
I'm not doing that. No.
I got an own to pick with Orlovsky.
No.
He suckers me into a bet. I got a bet. He's betting me dinner at the Polo Bar just because I can get in and he can't. And the next thing you know, it's a 9-1 odds, and he's like trying to make me a bet on dinner and all of this. It's ridiculous.
Come on, Jay,
UConn's an NBA team.
They execute like one, but their talent level, I would not say, would be able to make the play.
Mere fact that we're having this conversation,
possibly,
I think, says it all.
They had no chance. Yeah, I'm not going to go that way with the Greeny. Here's what I will say about
it. It says it all that Mike Greenberg is all about clickbait, and he's always been that way.
And he tried to walk this back. I don't know if he saw it. Like a day later, he tried, I was just joking. Maybe.
But I kind of believe him. I kind of
think maybe the tone you could read it a little bit.
I think this was more of a personal bet between he and Dan Orlovsky. It sounded like to me, like it seemed like Orlovsky might have suckered Greenberg into a bet and probably could have gotten odds and didn't. And then Greenberg's like, "Can you believe this guy taking advantage of me? UConn's so good they'd make the Eastern Conference playoffs."
Possible.
That's the way it kind of sounded to me.
Greenberg, I would hope so. Greenberg was one of those guys, though, because I don't know if you remember this coming. This is going back a few years, but there was a large group of people that seemed to think when Miami football in college, like in the early 2000s, was just at the height of the height of the height. As far as just their overall talent, that they could beat NFL teams. And guys like Greenberg were a part of that conversation. So it feels familiar to past arguments I've heard, but it doesn't make it any less ridiculous. Hopefully Greenberg, as he said, was only kidding.
Yeah, this is ridiculous because kids against grown-ass men and trying to see, like, the physicality.
Right, because, like, the thing that they miss, like, okay, sure, Miami, or in this case UConn, has a bunch of pros. You know how many pros a pro team has? All of them. Yeah. All of the roster is pros.
The college team will never beat a professional team.
Yeah, like exactly.
Maybe in baseball, like whenever you used to do the exhibitions and stuff. Yep. But
maybe the A's. Yeah, maybe
never
the A's.
Never in football, never in basketball. Ever. Ever. It'll never happen.
Totally agree. The physicality and athleticism at a different level. And to Brian's point, like, it's not about just some depth. I mean, these teams are constructed, NBA teams are constructed to go 10 deep with guys that can
The worst team in the NBA is filled with a ton. It was filled with an entire roster of guys like what UConn has.
I mean, it's just. Think of the pieces. Yeah. Like, they have Cade Cunningham,
right,
who was the first pick of the draft, who was good in college. They have Marcus Sasser, who was on a Final Four team. They have Quentin Grimes, who was on a Final Four team. They have a few more years of maturity. They have, like, real legitimate bench guys. Like, in that the college team beating a pro team, ain't no way. Ain't no way.
Jalen
ain't happening.
And Jalen Duren was pretty good when he was at Memphis, too, and a first-round pick. But, yeah, it's just a different ballgame, literally.
Yeah, it's not. It's a bad take. Carl Ravitch, who's not my favorite guy. He's pretentious. Pretentious fella. I don't like pretentious people.
I mean, I thought you liked pretentious people.
I do not like pretentious people.
I thought you guys saw eye to eye.
I do not like pretentious people. Carl Ravitch was talking to Greg Rajan. I guess it's Sunday's game against the Yankees Astros is on ESPN, so he got the guys or whatever. So Carl Ravitch, painted shortstop, that's a huge X factor for them. Who is he, given what we saw in the ALCS and World Series in 22? There was that downward trend last year. Can he bounce back? Bad take here because Carl Ravitch is not familiar with Jeremy Pena at all, it appears. Yes, he gave up power. Yes, the power disappeared from year one to year two. But Carl Ravitch completely ignores the fact that he improved in average, he improved in on-base percentage, he improved in strikeout rate, he improved in walk rate. He was actually a more mature hitter in year two than he was year one. There wasn't a downward trend with Jeremy Pena last year other than the power. I'll concede that. But to act like overall he took a huge step back from year one is a bad take, Carl Ravitch, and I don't like you very much.
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, tell me you don't watch Astros baseball consistently without telling me. I mean, this is a national guy doing a game, looking for something that he can grasp onto, but yeah, I'm with you on that.
He's also one of those pretentious idiots that think he's a baseball elitist that says plural RBIs, RBI, when we all know that that's wrong based on AP format.
I will never agree with you on that.
Well, you're ignoring information. Whenever
Man,
you
I,
say that.
You're ignoring proper way to pronounce things, but we don't have to
according
argue
According to
now.
Who?
I just, man, we don't, do we really
according
want to get
to
into
who?
We've,
well,
we've had this argument since 2016.
According to who?
Because it's runs batted in or run batted in.
According
if you
to
put
who?
The,
this is your opinion.
Just common sense with normal grammatical common
why
sense.
Why does AP style tell you to do this, which is the style of are journalism? We, and why are, does, are, well, you're interrupting
so we just
me.
Have
let
to.
Let me finish. AP style is what we use as journalists, but we're supposed to ignore that. And then MLA formatting is what we learned growing up in literature. We're supposed to ignore that?
We just have to agree with everything the AP tells us is the correct style.
When it comes to our writing, yes, journalists absolutely have to do AP style. Literature students absolutely have to do MLA formatting. The answer is yes to that question.
It's run batted in or runs batted in. If you put the apostrophe on there, it comes off as you're saying runs batted ins.
There's not an apostrophe. It's a capital R, capital B, capital I, lowercase s.
Well, maybe it's not as universal as you thought then, because I see RBIs.
It is universal.
Okay, I'm just telling you, I see the apostrophe all the time. Wait, even without the apostrophe, though, you still wouldn't say run batted ins.
RBI is an acronym for run batted in.
Run batted in or runs batted in.
No, it's run batted in. It's RBI is an acronym for run batted in.
So spell that out. Why would
that be? Let me finish. RBI is an acronym for run batted in. So whenever you put an RBI, you have the acronym, you drove in one run, it's RBI. RBI. When you have multiple, it becomes RBIs. MLA, AP, they tell us that. It's just not personal opinion because you want to.
We could argue on this all day. That's all right.
All right. 713-780-ESPN. I want to see Caitlin Clark in the Big Three. I don't know about you guys. Do you? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I love a good drink at the end of the day. I like Gentle Ben. Love Gentle Ben. Whether it's the vodka, the gin, the bourbon, it's all in the rotation for me. And Gentle Ben Spirits does it better than anyone else. How? Well, their revolutionary Percedo technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirit you'll ever taste. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it, including undesirable acids. These acids take the enjoyment out of your drinks. Well, Gentle Ben gets rid of that undesirable acid so you can enjoy. Try a sip of Gentle Ben vodka, gin, straight bourbon, or cask-strength bourbon. Compare it to what you drink, and you will never go back. I've been a Gentle Bin man ever since I had that first sip. You get all the flavor with none of the burn. So smooth, so clean. Eliminates that burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. Look for Gentle Bin at the liquor store, at the restaurant, your favorite bar. Head to the Gentle Bin tasting room. You can get it at Minute Maid Park. You can get it at the Toyota Center. Or you can go straight to the website, gentlebin.com. You can order straight from the site the vodka, the gin, the bourbon. Add it to your cart. Have it delivered straight to your doorstep. Gentlebin.com. Gentle Bin, period.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
Bees Blank, I'm Branham. The boys hit the Decoy in Spring Branch. 1-2-2-2 Witte. Astros opening day. Astros have squandered a 4-0 lead, tied at 4. Yep. First pitch, 6:05 in that game. College hoops beginning a little bit later this evening as well. The Decoy is your spot for it all. $100 ounce Shinerbach Towers for $10. $3 Makers, $2 Mexican Candy. March Madness, $6 Casamigos as well. Great spot. Houston Duke tomorrow in the NCAA tournament, Sweet 16. The Decoy is your West Houston watch party for the Cougs. Full audio during the game. They'll also have a DJ playing during the commercials, so there's no downtime at all. A great spot to hang out, have a little bit of fun. 713-780-3776. Blankers, you see that the Big Three and Ice Cube offered Caitlin Clark $5 million to play in their league?
I did. I saw it. Interesting. I don't think that – I think there's two different ways of looking at it. If I'm Caitlin Clark, you're not going to – I think the they got away from when I worked in the WNBA – they had three or four players. It was Swoops, Lobo, and Lisa Leslie that made like $250,000 a season. And everybody else made far less than $100,000 for a season. I think they said something about being the number one overall pick. She could make like $73,000 this year.
That's it.
If I had the chance to make $5 million to play in that season for 1 year, it doesn't matter how good or bad I do, at least I cash in.
Yeah, see, and then Portnoy, still Presidente from Barstools, he offered him $10 million. I don't know exactly what he's asking of her. Brian, do you know?
He said
he wants her to play in the Barstool Intramural League.
Yep. Oh, do they have a schedule? Do they play people?
I don't know. Maybe they're adding one in? I don't know.
If I'm Caitlin Clark, I'm calling. I think Portnoy is a bluff, but I'm calling the bluff and saying, "Let's go. Where's the contract? Give me $10 million."
I don't know if you said the number, but the salary coming in for the first overall pick is like $73,000.
That's what I said. Yeah.
I don't want to do the math. I don't want to call Joe over to do it for me. But how long would it take making $73,000 a year to get to the $10 million from Dave Portnoy?
A lot of time.
A long time.
I would call Barstool's bluff on this and be like, hey, where's the contract? Let's start playing some intramurals, baby, like that Colorado coach back in the day. I'm doing it. Now, I don't think that was a sincere offer from Presidente. I think he's trying to clout chase a little bit, but I'm absolutely doing the Big Three. If I'm Caitlin Clark, I'm doing it. Give me the $5 million. Let me cash in. Let me be set for life. I know you can make money in your offseason playing internationally, but just go ahead and lock in the $5 million. Why not? I don't think that Clark will do this because I think Clark would be worried that she might get exposed playing in the Big Three, where she wouldn't be, you know, like an average player in the Big Three. So I don't think that she would ultimately do it. I think she should lock in the finances. I also think it's genius from Ice Cube. Absolutely get her in the league if you can, at least make her an offer, because now you're going to get eyeballs. No one watches the Big Three right now. You get her people are going to tune in at least once.
Yeah, and the thing is she's going to maintain her endorsement. She's going to keep State Farm, and I think Nike, and she has a couple other ones where she's going to continue with those and put the $5 million in the bank account. And you know, if it's a 1 year deal, next year she goes to the WNBA, she's still going to get the same level of attention. You're right. The risk for her is that you're going to have guys that don't want to be shown up by a female that are going to be aggressive, and they are going to make sure she doesn't do anything. And will that hurt her brand and hurt her name? I know it won't hurt her bank account.
I think we're all in agreement that the financial good sense is to take the money from the Big Three or Dave Portnoy. But I think there's another aspect in here that we obviously can't fully understand, having not been on that side of it. But I don't know if her as an ambassador for the women's game is going to view this as being like going to basically play with the men is then as an insult to the women's game that she would then go back to. So I can see her wanting to be the ambassador for the women's game and not taking the money. bites, and then therefore kind of in a way saying that their game is less than the men's game.
I don't think she's going to take the money. I think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I don't either.
I would. I mean, I can't fully obviously know what it's like to walk in her shoes. I would take the money, but I could see her saying, look, I have the endorsements that can make up a large gap of what I would miss out on by going to the big three. I'd like to be the ambassador for the women's game, not basically cast a less than light on the WNBA by agreeing to go play somewhere else.
I mean, look, when you're doing a three-point contest with Alonsku and Curry, I mean, it's not, you know, physical basketball. It's shooting, and that was right. That was fun to watch. But I believe that the risk here is that it tarnishes a lot of the women's game because of the fact that they're playing against grown-ass.
Right.
She's playing against grown-ass physical men.
If she goes to the big three and, like as you say, gets physically dominated, then goes back to the goes to the WNBA and dominates, that's going to cast a light on the women's game that I don't think they really would want shown on it.
Don't we already have that light on the women's game, though? Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm looking out for myself. I'm going to cash in $5 million. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to make $5 million in the women's game. And it's already something that exists out there that the women's game is lesser than the men's game, which I think is a fine take to have. So, I mean, I agree with you that Caitlin Clark's not going to do this. I don't think it necessarily stains the women's game because I don't think anybody thinks that women, like the champion of the WNBA, would beat the champion of the NBA.
Well, I'll tell you this. What it does no matter what is whoever is representing her goes to the WNBA and says, hey, let's talk because we need to start talking about certain players or at least in the case where I have an offer from somebody else. If you feel like this is a big thing for the league and a lot of people have said this is the female that's going to carry the torch for the WNBA for the foreseeable future, there has to be a higher value on that than $73,000 a year.
You have to make her say no to $5 million. You're right. Like, if you're worried about that because of, like, that stain or whatever, then you need to make her financially incentivized to where she's not even tempted by a $5 million offer. You're exactly right. It's almost like PGA in a sense, like, where they're having to change everything that they're doing because of these, you know, the league offers and these offers that are out there. How do you think she would perform in the Big Three, Blankers?
I don't think it would go well. I don't because of the fact, like you said, I mean, there's a difference between the two games. It's not just the physicality. These guys are great athletes, and even if it's in the three-on-three game, they don't have to play full court. So they're going to have a little bit more spring. They're going to be able to, you know, put, you know, physical on her and also athletic and being able to jump. And she has to guard somebody on the other end. I don't think it would go well for her.
I can't remember who said it today, but they said that she wouldn't score 1 point in a Big Three game. I don't buy that.
I disagree. Think
she would. I mean, she could at least be a spot-up shooter.
She shoots from the logo as it is. It is a men's ball, but at the same time, she's going to make a three.
Yeah, I mean, someone would be able to set her up for a three.
Somebody would get a rebound, kick it out, knock down a bucket. She would be able to score. I don't think she could, like, sit down and, like, break down a defender one-on-one nonstop throughout a game. But she'd be able to at least knock down a shot. I want to see it, though. I think it would be highly entertaining. I think it would be a lot of fun.
I mean, I know it sounds like you don't watch the Big Three now. Would that be enough for you to watch it?
Yeah, I'd watch it. I'd tune in at least once if Caitlin Clark was in the Big Three.
I'll tell you what, if you're the WNBA, how you try and your best-case scenario to fix this is she says what she has to say that I'm worth more. They get sponsors to give her money for endorsements that equal what she needs to make, and the league doesn't have to adjust their salary structure because the league can't do this. They can't take on a couple of
players. So they did this before? Well, because it's kind of – I think what you mentioned before was where a few players got paid more than the rest.
When the league started, because they needed some people to, like –
that's kind of the MLS style right now. Like, there's a couple players that get the crazy contracts, and everyone else is real low.
Yeah, they had Swoops and Lobo and Lisa Leslie. And that was the first where they had to carry the league and be the front people. But I think in this case, if you make the precedent change of paying her a big sum of money – whoever's coming up next that's going to be the star player in college is going to say, I want that deal. And they can't afford – it's not sustainable financially for them to give multiple players that kind of money.
I don't think there's going to be that many Caitlin Clarks, though. Like, I think Caitlin Clark is –
I mean, Angel Reese, maybe.
I think Caitlin Clark is to the women's game what Tiger Woods is to golf. Like, I don't think that there's going to be many players that can come close to the cachet of Caitlin Clark. I don't think Ace Reese could. I think Caitlin Clark is to women's basketball, Tiger West to golf. 9780, a few other texters, her shot would be off using a men's ball. I don't think that that has as big a difference as you're making it out to be, 9780. I think there would be a droppage. I think there would be a little bit of that, but not much. Like, I don't know what she shot from three this year, Blankers. Let's just assume it was 40%. If she shot 40% from three this year in the women's game, what do you think she would shoot with a men's ball?
I mean, it's more about the defense than the shot and the ball. I think that she's probably going to shoot.
Let's just say the men's ball in a vacuum, because the texture's making it seem like
The men's ball is just the difference in ball, maybe 2%.
Just ball alone. What'd you say?
Probably 38%.
Yeah, I had it at 37, 38. Like, I don't think it's a huge drop-off like some people make it out to be.
You know what it is, Jeremy? It's like in a different way, but it is similar. When the NBA players go to play in the Olympics, the ball has smaller seams. It's a little bit – I don't know if it's a difference in size much, but it's definitely a different feel. So it's an adjustment, and maybe you go 2 percentage points down a little bit. But the guys adjust, and if you're shooting with it every day, you get used to it.
Total Arlington says the early WNBA stars were paid to keep them from going overseas. I vaguely remember that, but I don't know the details on that. I know a lot of the women's players now just go overseas, and they go overseas in the off season.
Yeah, they do both. I mean, that's how Brittany Griner got in that situation in Russia. She had a great deal to play for a nice salary in Russia, and then obviously we know what happened. But yeah, the fact that the WNBA players can double dip, they play the summer season with the WNBA, and then they play the regular basketball season of the fall and the winter somewhere else.
713-780-ESPN. How many Astros are in the top 100? Who got left off? How much does it matter? What do you think the number is? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, right now a few minutes to talk about the good people at Vanderford Air. Look, Vanderford Air is going to have you covered at the most critical time if you're a Houstonian. We know that the summer months are going to be loaded with 100-degree days. You know you have to be prepared to make sure your HVAC system, your heating and your air conditioning, your plumbing, everything is up to snuff. But primarily with air conditioning, you want someone that's going to be on call for you when you call them. If something goes wrong, you want to call somebody that's not going to be there in 2 or 3 days. You want to call somebody that's going to be there right away. That's what Vanderford Air does for you. They have a guarantee. Within 24 hours of your call, they will be at your door to help you out when you need them. They have tons of other guarantees, too, which are essential to you, because you don't want someone that's going to be not certified or do half-you-know-what work, and they're going to have to come back, and then you're going to haggle about price. Vanderford has all the guarantees that you need, starting with the biggest one, 100% money-back guarantee. If you're not satisfied 100%, you get your money back. That's what you want from a company, especially with something as critical as air conditioning. That means on all their plumbing, on all their air conditioning, the fact is they are going to do 100% satisfaction guaranteed work, or you will get your money back. They also have the other guarantees, best value, lowest cost to you, comfort assurance guarantees, quality workmanship guarantees, performance guarantees, but of course the one that matters most, the 100% satisfaction guarantee, is all you want and all you need. Make sure that the parts, whether it's a repair or a complete replacement, are adequate. They live up to the billing, and so does the work and the craftsmanship that they put into it. Check them out today. It's really simple. You can go to VanderfordAir.com, or you can call them, and it's an easy-to-remember number, 281-557-COOL, 281-557-COOL. Get that air conditioning unit checked out before the heat really hits, and make sure you're prepared. Call Vanderford Air.